so impressed with Christ because Jesus doesn't let us off easy on the tough topics that we all face. He doesn't skirt around them, doesn't ignore they don't exist, but he goes right in to deal with them and talk about them. So how about some good news, some good statistics this morning as we get going? We've been told that divorce rates have been climbing in the U.S., but as I started to do research this week, in 2019, we started to find out that divorce is actually declining in the U.S. So divorce rates are actually going down. In fact, from 2009 to 2019, the divorce rate per 1,000 women went from 9.6 down to 7.6. And that's all women in a category 15 and older. And they measure women because on the census, the statisticians tell us women tend to be more honest about their relationships than guys. So 9.6 down to 7.6. The states with the lowest rate of divorce and the biggest change in divorce is Maine and the District of Columbia, with 4.8 divorces per 1,000 women. And Ohio fell a little higher than the U.S. average with 8.3 divorces per 1,000 women. So another interesting fact, and I know sometimes it's easy for us to pick on millennials, but stats are showing us that millennials are actually getting married later but staying married a lot longer than previous generations. Is that some cool news? So we look at these young people and think, oh, the world, what's going to happen? They're actually getting marriage a little more right. Even though divorces are going down, we're still not out of the woods. The U.S. has the world's sixth highest divorce rate. And it's led the way. Anybody want to guess who has what country has the highest divorce rate? Any guesses? Go ahead, call it out. We'll just start for some fun. England, who, what was over here? India, nope. 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 It's somewhere that's really cold that their hearts must be cold as well. Russia. Russia has the highest divorce rates. I thought that was interesting. So even though divorces are going down, we're not out of the woods. And researchers tell us that 41% of first marriages will end in divorce, 60% of second marriages, and 73% of third marriages. So if you got divorced once, chances are, high chance, you're going to probably get divorced again. Marriage has been a mainstay of Focus on the Family. If you used to follow them and listen to them, they're still around. Marriage and divorce, that's all been one of their mainstay topics. They've done considerable work gathering great statistics, gathering information on the state of marriage. And one article that I read from Focus on the Family was very interesting and insightful. They said that divorce rates inside the church are not that different than divorce rates outside the church. So going to church doesn't appear to have a huge effect on our marriages, sad to say. They did also say, and I found this very curious, there is a huge difference, though, in the way divorce happens within the church or outside the church. And the big difference is, inside the church, nobody knows about it until the divorce happens. So we tend to put on smiley faces, we tend to act like everything's good, and then all of a sudden, what? They got divorced. I find it interesting that in the Christian world, we treat sexual issues and marriage issues with very similar lenses. These issues are silent killers. We don't like to be open about our struggles in marriage within the church for fear that we'll be shunned or we'll disappoint people or people will look down upon us because I'm a Christian. I'm supposed to have a great marriage. So what ends up happening inside the church is we struggle in silence until one of us kills one another emotionally, relationally, and then we go off and get a divorce. So I want to start at this point this morning. As we look at moving beyond divorce papers this morning, I want to make it clear that we as a church want to help you, and I hope that we can be real with one another in our church. It's one of the things I like about LifeSpring, and I hope we can continue being real. I know we have the miracle of doors. I've talked about that before, that the front doors are one of the biggest places. If you want to know if miracles still happen today, just, you know, become a greeter, right, Rich? Did I do a nice plug? Rich is looking for some new greeters, some fresh greeters. If you want to see miracles every Sunday, just stand at the front door, because a miracle happens so often at the front door because you all have a knockdown, drag-out fight on the way to church because somebody didn't drive right, but as soon as you reach the front door, everything's fine. Am I off? I've been there. I've done it. Right. Miracle of the front doors. I hope we can be real with one another within the church. And for years, I've actually endured pre-marriage counseling. I've said this before, I would rather do a wedding than a marriage. Because at a wedding, people are actually listening and people give a rip. But at a wedding, everybody's like, oh, we're just in love. You know, it's like, you know you're going to have some problems. No, we're in love. And it's like, oh, would you just listen to me a little bit, you know? So I've endured marriage counseling. But a couple years ago, I ran into something that's changed my own approach in marriage counseling. I ran into this group in this system called Symbis, Save Your Marriage Before It Starts. I love the material. I loved their precepts, their concepts, the way they went about this, so much so that I took the course and paid the money and I got the certificate. So I am a Symbis trainer, a Symbis counselor, and it's great material for pre-marriage to prepare you for what you're about to step into, but also help couples who are struggling. So if you're struggling, I hope that you'll be honest about that, that you'll come talk to me and we can sit down and I can talk with both of you together and hopefully not just sit in my chair with a dumbfounded look like, oh, she's crazy, oh, he's horrible, you know, but actually step in and be able to help you a little bit. We have to get beyond this concept or this idea that everything will just work itself out and that marriage should just be easy, because it's not. Oh, I see some heads going, Who would agree? Marriage isn't easy. It's tough. It's hard. Some days it's wonderful, but some days it's a struggle. So, okay, we're in this series, though, Kingdom Kind of Life. And what this series is about is Jesus in his most brilliant of orations, his most brilliant of speeches, the Sermon on the Mount. He begins to address some of the major issues in life. And his overlay, his thought is, how do we as kingdom-minded people deal with these big stressors in life? And we all humanity, have these stressors in life. We all have people who irritate us, right? We do. Come on. We all have people who just irritate us. We also have, we're sexual beings, so we have sexual issues. Jesus addresses that. That should play itself out in a marriage. That's the way it's designed. And so we have marriage issues. We also get into the honesty issue from the very beginning. We've, as a human race, have had honesty issues, you know, being fully honest. We also, people get mad at us. Have you ever done something that just bugged the daylights out of somebody else? And has somebody else done something to you that bugged the daylights? You became the irritant, or you had an irritant, and a relationship started to go south. And we all have people who we're not getting along with really well in marriage or outside of marriage. And sometimes it just happens. Some people decide to make us their enemy. And sometimes we sort of want to make some other people our enemy, because of the friction, the sour relationships. And in these core issues of life, Jesus says, you know, people who are living like me, people who are having my mindset, they're going to deal with these issues differently than everybody else. And he starts moving through, how do we as kingdom-minded people deal with these things? So today, here's Jesus' words. Right out of Matthew 5, verse 31. It has been said, anyone who divorces his wife must give her a certificate of divorce. But I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality makes her the victim of adultery, and anyone who marries a divorced woman commits adultery. So what is Jesus saying here? In Jesus' day, divorce was not that uncommon. While it was an inconvenience for the man, it was a horrible nightmare for a woman. Not only was divorce very prevalent in Jesus' day, but the debates around divorce were just as rampant and just as discussed as they are today around the church. Now, a man was generally thought to be righteous and good in the matter of divorce if he sent his wife away with a certificate stating that she's no longer my wife, she's divorced from me. And at this point, she would at least then have a certificate to prove her status as unmarried. So this allowed for her. This gave her a few rights, if you will. Women didn't have a whole lot of rights, but this would give her a few rights. It would allow her to defend herself if she was with another guy, because the penalty for adultery in Jewish culture was, does anybody remember? Stoning. You're dead. So if you get caught, if a woman gets caught with another man, then she's going to get stoned, and another married man. So it would allow her to be defended, and this is really interesting, and I'm not a male chauvinist, and I just want you to understand, women were property in this culture. Not just Jesus' culture, not just Jewish culture, in Roman culture, in the Gentile culture, women were simply seen as property to be owned. So a woman who was cheating on her husband, the offense wasn't against the husband that she was cheating with, it was actually against her husband. Because women couldn't have rights. So you could never, you know, the offense could never be against a woman, it was always against a man. Well, with a certificate of divorce, if she was with another guy, she would be okay. She would get off and not be stoned. It also made it possible that she could get remarried, very unlikely, but she could get remarried. And if nothing else, it gave her the right to make a living as a prostitute. You need to understand how horrible divorce was for women, not for men, but for women in Jesus' day. So if all else fails, you can survive because now you have a certificate and you can prostitute yourself and make money that way. To understand this more fully, Jesus, in Jesus' day, women were seen with no rights and simply as possessions to be possessed. A woman's value only came through the man that she was connected to, either her husband or her father. It's the only value a woman had was her last, in our culture, would be, who's your last name? That's where your value is. And that's what it was for the Romans as well as the Jews. It was a sad state for women. And by the way, this status is still very prevalent in the world today. So if you're like, well, you know, well, that's horrible and that's awful. But if you're of a liberal mindset and you want to welcome all cultures of the world, you need to understand in the Middle East and in Muslim countries, women hold the same status that they held in Jesus' day. They're simply property to be possessed, and that's it. Women have no rights. So it's still happening in the world today. While this may sound like a side note, Jesus was very much a liberal in his thinking for his day. He was a liberal in his thinking. When it came to marriage and divorce, Jesus actually equaled the rights of women and men. Jesus looked at women as equals to men, and that was not a common thing. And in that regard, Jesus was seen as a liberal in his day. So in this essence, Jesus was a liberal advocating for women's proper and fair treatment and women's rights. So there was a lot of debate in Jesus' day surrounding divorce and what was right and what was wrong. And for some Jews, they believed that a man could divorce his wife for any and every reason. But then there was another school of thought that said, no, that's not God's design, and they can only be divorced for adultery. And when Jesus was confronted by the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 19 over divorce, Jesus took actually the more moral high ground than did a lot of people in his day. And so just to help you understand this, the school of Shammai was the one who had, you know, divorce was only allowable on adultery, on moral grounds. But then the school of Hillel, by contrast, permitted divorce for any and every reason. So for example, if the wife burned the toast in the morning or she oversalted the husband's food, you're out. I'm not happy with that. And it would even go Rabbi Akiba, if I got the Akiba in there, A-K-I-B-A-H, that school of thought, Rabbi Akiba's school, even allowed for divorce if a man saw another woman that he thought was prettier than his wife, he could dump his current wife and pick her up. That was even allowable. So there was a lot of debate. What's allowable? What's okay in divorce? While Jesus comes down on the conservative or restrictive side of divorce, he also tells that divorce is never part of God's plan, and it should be avoided at all costs. Even in the case of adultery, divorce should be avoided, should be staved off. So let's take a look at Jesus' words further. Matthew chapter 19. So we're going to go a little further forward. Matthew chapter 19. Let me read this for you. When Jesus had finished saying these things, he left Galilee. And he went to the region of Judah, to the other side of the Jordan, and large crowds followed him and healed them there. Some Pharisees came up to him to test him. Now remember, there's debates going on about divorce. This is a very common debate. And they come up to Jesus and they ask, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Jesus responds, haven't you read, he replied, that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female and said, for this reason a man will leave his father and his mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. Why then, they asked, did Moses command that a man give his wife a certificate of divorce and send her on her way? And Jesus replied, Moses permitted you to divorce your wives because your hearts were hard. But it was not this way from the beginning. I tell you that anyone who divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. So Jesus opens the door for divorce, but doesn't suggest it, doesn't advise it. Divorce is not the preferred method of dealing with marriage problems. And for a kingdom-minded person, divorce will be the last resort and not something that's quickly and fast to jump to, quickly sought after. Divorce was not part of God's plan, but because we are sinful, because our hearts are hard, because our hearts have moved into contempt, divorce has been allowed rather than suffering in misery. It's not the ideal. We should never strive after it, and it only shows us how broken we are. Jesus' teaching on this is very practical. So let's consider this. Our culture has propagated a horrible lie upon most of us. We have propagated the idea of no-fault divorce and no-casualty divorce. We've attempted in our imaginations to, in order to get what we want and slip out of a marriage really easily for selfish reasons or whatever, we've tried to separate the consequences of a divorce from the freedom that we will get from the divorce. And we've justified our seeking after divorce as a way out. Now, sometimes it is necessary, but oftentimes in our culture, we are simply unwilling to do the hard work that a marriage requires and would rather just look for greener pastures down the road. This is getting too difficult here. If I could marry her, if I could be with him, life would be so much simpler because my husband and my wife, oh, they're just a bear to deal with. It'd be so much easier with somebody else. Divorce is a horrible thing, and it leaves deep and painful wounds on all sides of the fence. Dave Ramsey said something very interesting. He said, the best advice, financial advice, that I could give anyone, best financial advice I could give anyone, never get divorced. It's from Dave Ramsey on finances, not on marriage, but on finances. Best advice, never get divorced. How many of you have been negatively impacted by a divorce? Not necessarily you yourself getting divorced, but your parents, some brother or sister, in-laws. How many of you have been negatively impacted? It was woundful. It was hurtful. We have this concept in our culture that, oh, divorce is not that big of a deal. It is always a big deal. It always wounds. It always hurts. And so Jesus' concept, Jesus' idea is, hey, maybe it's better to figure out how to stay together. And maybe it may look like it's easier to get a divorce, but maybe staying together is actually the easier route. Researchers are showing us that this is one of the reasons why millennials are waiting until their 30s to get married, and why when they get married, they actually stay married. As I was looking at these statistics, it dawned on me this week. Do you realize that most of the millennials are those that are like 30, 25 and down. Do you realize that most young people today have no conceptual idea of what a lifelong marriage looks like? We are now in generational divorce state. It's not just mom and dad who got divorced, but it's grandma and grandpa and grandma and grandpa. They have nobody in their lives. A lot of young people have no one in their lives that have been married for 50, 60 years. They just have no conceptual idea of that. And so it's interesting to me to see that these millennials are now saying, hang on a second, we see the damage, we've experienced it, we're products of it, and we don't want to do it like that. Now, yes, they end up living together first, oftentimes, but they're getting married later, and they're also staying together longer. So kudos to the younger generation on that one. Frankly, if you're in your 45s and up, we screwed it up pretty bad. We did. 1980s was the highest divorce rates our country have ever seen. And so it's these older generations that we did not figure out marriage. And I pray, like I'll get out, that hopefully the young people can. Okay, let's rein this back into the sermon series. We're not going down a series on marriage right now, but we are rather doing a series on living in the kingdom, or living the kingdom kind of life. So in this series on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is not giving us a new set of rules to follow. He's not saying, okay, well, out with the old, and here's the new rules. You got to follow these now. That's not what he's doing here. He is wanting us to see, what does a heart that's chasing after the kingdom look like, and how does a heart that's chasing after God's kingdom react and function even inside of a marriage? For a kingdom-minded person, they would be living beyond divorce papers. For a kingdom-minded person, it's not a matter of divorce being legal or right or wrong. For a kingdom-minded person, it's not about a rule concerning what we can or can't do, but rather, it's about living in our marriages in such a manner that we would never want to get a divorce. Divorce should not be an option for kingdom-minded people, not because it's a rule, but because they're so in love with each other and so working to live in harmony with one another that they would never want to go get a divorce. Does that make sense? It's not a rule thing. It's that I actually like this person that I'm married to. I couldn't imagine doing life without him. This is a huge point. Let me illustrate this in a different way. If you had a great relationship with someone that you loved, if your wildest sexual dreams were being fulfilled inside that marriage, if you got to go to sleep with your best friend at night and wake up to them or wake up next to them in the morning, if the person you are married to helps you be the best you that you can be, if your spouse is a great partner in all aspects of life and if you enjoy their company and spending time with them, then why would you ever want to divorce them or leave them? You see, that's the kind of marriages Jesus says a kingdom kind of person is going to be shooting for and striving after. I would never divorce Michelle, not because it's against the rules, but honestly, I would never divorce Michelle because I wouldn't want to, and I've never wanted to. Now, I joke that at my age, I'd have no clue how to find another girl, so Michelle don't die, you know? But I would never want to divorce Michelle because she's my best friend. And this is Jesus' thoughts on this, that divorce isn't about a rule of right and wrong, but Jesus' emphasis is that your marriage is so good that you would never want to even entertain the idea. It's off your radar. So let's talk about this. How do we have a kingdom kind of marriage? How do we have a kingdom kind of marriage? We could spend a long time here. I've actually debated how to do. I want to do a marriage series. Just haven't felt the clarity by the Spirit to work on it in a sermon series on Sunday. Somewhere I think it's going to come up. But about a year ago, I picked up a book, and just out of curiosity, and I began to read it. The way I read books is I read like a half or two-thirds or a quarter, then I move on to another book. So I have a whole bunch of books I've started. I've gotten about three-quarters of the way through, and as I started reading through this book, it quickly dawned on me, this is the book that I would have written had I beat the guy to the punch. It's excellent stuff. It's wonderful thing, or wonderful book. And the book is simply Love and Respect by Dr. Emerson Eggerichs. And I would suggest if you're married or ever thinking about being married, write that down. Love and Respect by Dr. Emerson Eggerichs, Eggerichs. The book is based on some concepts that I've been teaching for several years, quite a few years, in marriage counseling. And it's interesting because right off the bat, he gives the answer that the solution to our marriage problems was actually given to us in Scripture. The solution, it's a very simple solution, was given in Scriptures over 2,000 years ago. For whatever reason, we either didn't read it, didn't like it, or didn't apply it, but we sort of ignored what Scripture had to say about some of this. And the solution was given by the Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33. So you can jot that verse down. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 33. In this passage, Paul is addressing family issues. I think it's sort of interesting. He's talking about the kingdom kind of life, just like what Jesus was doing, and marriage became one of the topics. So Ephesians 5 has a lot to talk about, a lot to say about marriage. And I find it interesting that just like Jesus, if you're going to live the kingdom kind of life, it's going to affect your marriage. Paul says the same thing. If you're going to live the kingdom kind of life, it's going to affect the way that you do marriage. And so here's what Paul says. He lists out all this stuff about marriage and what a husband and wife should do and a father and a mom and how it should work. And then in verse 33, he sums it all up by this fascinating statement that answers, I think, 99% of our marriage problems. He's speaking to men primarily. That's their culture. Each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself. And, don't skip that, and the wife must respect her husband. So each one of you must love your wife as you love yourself. And each of you wives must respect your husband. Seldom have I found that the cause of divorce is one spouse's issue over the other. Dealt with a lot of marriages in my ministry, and I've seldom found that it's one person's fault. It's usually two people's fault. Even if adultery enters the picture, I've lived long enough to realize that both parties in that marriage were at fault leading up to even adultery. Unfortunately, in our world, and this is just the world we live in the Christian world, the man tends to get the blame for a lot of the problems in marriages over the wife. But I've dealt with enough wives to know that there's no way that some wives, I would even want to be married to you. Sorry, but I wouldn't. When it comes to marriage, I would say 80% of the time, marriage problems are the fault of both spouses and not just one over the other. But the broken record that I hear is, oh, if he just loved me, he doesn't love me anymore. And I look over at the guy and I'm looking at his face and he's like, nope, I don't. But when I start talking to the guy, you know what he's thinking? And she doesn't respect me. Oh. Maybe both people have a little bit of a problem. As I sit there and listen, it becomes quite evident that there's two convictions going on. The guy isn't loving, but the wife is not respectful. And you know what's interesting? Wives will speak it, because ladies just tend to be more verbal. But guys will never tell you that you're disrespecting me. They just won't do that. They'll just melt away. But the way that I've heard some ladies talk about their husbands and to their husbands, from a guy's perspective, it's downright disrespectful. Well, if you loved me, I would respect you. And he fires back, well, if you'd respect me, I'd love you. And I think it's really interesting. One of the things Dr. Agret did is he drew up this little diagram. He called it the crazy cycle. Let's put the crazy cycle up here. And this is what destroys most of our marriages, this crazy cycle. And we jump on this merry-go-round. Without love, she responds without respect. But without respect, he responds without love. And all of a sudden, whew, here we go. And it can be over the stupidest thing, like, you almost hit that kitty on the way to church this morning. You want me to really hit it? You know, and all of a sudden we get in this knockdown, drag out fight, and we start zipping around this circle, and we get on this merry-go-round, and it makes us sick. And we spin so fast on this merry-go-round that we get sick. We stop the merry-go-round long enough to get off and throw up, and then we jump right back on it again because of the next issue. She doesn't respect, so I'm not going to give love. He doesn't love, so I'm not going to give respect. And around and around and around we go. Listen to what Paul said. Each one of you must love his wife as he loves himself. And the wife must respect her husband. Let me share the brilliance of this thought. And I share this in marriage counseling, pre-marriage counseling especially. Husbands naturally need respect. We guys don't tend to need love near as much. Just don't need it. We're not built that way. But boy, we need respect. And we'll go work 80 hours at a job, not because of a paycheck, but because I want respect. And I'm going to prove that I'm a good worker. I'm going to prove that I can do this job. I'm going to prove that I have the ability to do this just because I want my boss, I want my neighbor, I want my dad, I want my whoever, buddy, to simply pat me on the back and say, wow, good job. On the other hand, women are built a little differently. And women need love. They need to be respected. They should be respected. But they can deal with not having the respect if they just know that they are loved, that they're cherished, that they're important. It's sort of interesting in our culture, a woman will trade her sexuality for an ounce of love, even though it's hollow and empty, because the need for love is so great. So what happens is men tend to give what they naturally want, and women tend to give what they naturally want, and it's not the same thing, so we sort of hit in the wrong area. So guys will tend to give more respect, not love, because that's just what they're built for, is respect. But women will tend to give a whole lot of love, but not a whole lot of respect, because it's just the way they're built. And what happens is we end up missing each other. And Paul says, in a great marriage, if you really want to get this down, guys, you need to figure out how to love your wives. And you're not doing so good at that. You need to figure this out. You need to figure out how to cherish them, how to hold them in high esteem, how to treat them like a queen or a princess. But ladies, you all need to learn how to respect your husbands, how to use your words to build them up. I'll let you in on a secret. Guys, they'll never tell you this, but guys have very fragile egos. And it comes down to respect. Doesn't take a lot to kill a guy. Just tell him, that was really stupid, honey. I can't believe you tried to do that. Just belittles a man. But they'll never tell you that. And so Paul says, wives, respect your husbands. Husbands, love your wives like you should, just like you would love yourself. And all of a sudden, when we begin to do this in our marriage, when we begin to love and respect one another in the marriage, then all of a sudden the crazy cycle begins to slow down. All of a sudden we begin to realize, you know, even though what she said wasn't very respectful, I know that she loves me, and underneath somewhere she does respect me. It slows down the crazy cycle. And when the guy does something dumb, or the lady doesn't act, or the guy does something dumb, she doesn't respect him. The other way around, if the wife's like, man, you know, I never hear him tell me he loves me. Do you really underneath think that he hates you? You see, when we stop this cycle, all of a sudden the marriage can come together. All of a sudden, when I begin to love and respect, when love and respect begins to dominate the relationship, all of a sudden this thing starts to get really good. There is so much that I'd like to talk about on this, but here's the reality. We're talking about the kingdom kind of life, so here's your homework assignment for the day. Go home and figure out what it means to love and respect your wife or your husband. I don't need to lay it all out for you. We could spend hours with me giving you examples, but go home. If you're a lady and you're married, figure out how to respect your husband better. If you're a husband, go home. Figure out how to actually cherish your wife for a change. Love her more than you love the NFL.
Can I say that?
Right, go figure that out. Here's my last thought that I want to give you this morning. I want to leave you with this concept. I want to hammer this home because I hammer it home in counseling. You can ask anyone that I've counseled over the last couple years and they'll probably tell you, yeah, he says that a lot. The choice is always yours. The choice is always yours. Do you want a happy home? The choice is yours. Do you want to be loved? Do you want to be respected? The choice is yours. Do you want to get a divorce, or do you want to stay together for a lifetime? The choice is yours. Do you want to have a happy home, joyful marriage? What's my answer? The choice is yours. Stop blaming everyone else, including the person that you share rings with. The choice is yours. Your bad marriage isn't your mom and dad's fault. Really? No. It isn't the culture's fault. It isn't television's fault. The bad marriage is your fault because the choice is yours. And if you want to have a rotten home, if you want to hate your spouse, if you want to be in anger and dread going home so much you'd rather stay in the garage or stay at work, guess what? The choice is yours. And it's the choice that you made that have led you to this point. Now, let me illustrate this a little bit. Have you ever noticed that we are all different? Anybody notice that? We are all different. And with those differences, we all have differences of opinion. Oh, we do. Some of you love the music this morning. Some of you are like, oh, I just wish we could sing the old rugged cross. We all have differences of opinion. My opinion is that the best color that God ever gave us was yellow, and particularly fluorescent yellow. That is the best. Thank you, Richard. That is the best color right there on his shirt, man. That's an awesome color. And you all have to agree with me, right? Well, you're just wrong. Okay, that's the best color. Okay, really quick, count of three. Tell me your favorite color. One, two, three. You're all wrong. It's yellow, I'm telling you. That's the color, okay? We're all different. We all have differences of opinion. We all have differences, and that's what makes us unique. We look differently. We're built differently. We have different things going on in our brains. We just look at things differently. And here's the deal. You can choose, and unbelievably, when you come, how many of you have been married long enough to realize your wife's a lot different than you? Thank you, Jane. Yeah. Whoo, they're way different, okay? Not just in the physique, you know, they're really different. When it comes to marriage, you are so different. And you can look at those differences. Here's where the choice is yours. You can look at those differences and allow all those little differences to be little needles that just keep stabbing you and making you miserable. Or you can start to look at those differences as God-given, and maybe it makes us better together than it would if we were apart. The choice is yours. You can look at those differences. Well, he never rolls up the toothpaste tube. Well, maybe you squeeze it from the middle and make a mess, okay? Maybe, well, he never puts down the lid. Well, maybe you never put up the lid. You can allow all those little things to just drive you nuts in your marriage, and you can end up killing each other over stupid things because we jump on the crazy cycle. Or you can begin to allow those differences just to remind you, hey, we're different, but some of the things that we're different in actually makes us better. Oftentimes, it just fascinates me, God puts people who are different in so many ways together. Here's one example. She loves going out and seeing her friends. Oh, she loves partying and just being out, and Friday night at home is the most horrible thing in the world. And yet for him, oh, there is nothing better than sitting on the couch and being brain dead watching a movie. Now, you can allow that to kill your marriage. Or maybe for the guy, her going out could actually give you a life because you ain't got one. Or maybe for her, it actually might get you to stay home a little bit because there's things at the house that need to be done too, and you need to spend time just with each other. You see, those things can kill us, or they can bring us together, and the choice is yours. Paul said something to this effect. He actually prayed a prayer that I think is fascinating. He was writing to the Philippians, and his prayer for the Philippians was that your love would abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight. I've always found that a fascinating prayer. And what I believe Paul is saying there is that we go against the natural flow of things, that the more you know about somebody, the more that you will actually love them. Now, society gives us a different picture. Society tells us that the more you learn about somebody, the less likely you're going to like them. Anybody ever notice that? That you really get to know somebody and you're like, whoo, I thought I liked them, but oh, I don't like that and I don't like that, because you're learning more about them. And Paul says, wait. For us as Christians, for us with godly mindsets, with kingdom mindsets, his prayer is that the more you know about somebody, the more you actually begin to love them, even in those quirks, even those things that could drive you nuts. Nah, they're not going to drive me nuts, because those things are just going to help me love them more. What a prayer. My prayer is that your love for one another will abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight. And this brings us right back to what I just said. The choice is yours. Choice is yours. Do you want to have a great marriage? Do you want to have a happy home? The choice is yours. It's up to you. It's up to both of you. The choice is yours. So when it comes to divorce, Jesus' hope is that the kingdom-minded person will simply never want to seek a divorce. Not because it's against the rules, but because you've chosen to be in love with your spouse for a lifetime, and you've chosen to be in love with Jesus for a lifetime. And that makes all the difference. Here's how I want to end this morning. I want to pray for our marriages. And so I'm going to ask anyone who is currently married to stand up. If you currently are married. And widows, I want to pray over you in a moment. But if you're currently, you have a spouse, whether they're here or not this morning, I want you to stand up. My kudos to some of the widows that we have in our church, because they did lead the road. 50 years of marriage, 45, 60 years of marriage, and their spouse has now gone on. So thank you, widows. Will you pray with me for these married couples this morning? But I want to pray over each of you that God will give you the courage, the Holy Spirit will lead you to love and respect one another, and that you can make a choice to have an awesome home. Dear Heavenly Father, we desire to be kingdom-minded people. And as kingdom-minded people, Father, we know we're going to look and live a little differently than the rest of the world. And so for the folks that are standing up before me this morning, I pray your blessing upon their relationship. I pray that you fill the mouths, the tongues, the words of the ladies, that they will be unbelievably respectful of their mans, of their men. I pray, Father, you'll give them the ability, the knowledge, to know how to build her husband up and to lift them up and protect their fragile egos. And Father, I pray for the men here. I pray that you help us become more loving towards our wives. May we learn to love our wives and cherish them more than we love football, our cars, the yard work, or whatever may fill our days. May we learn to cherish the wife that you have brought to us. Not just in our hearts, but in our actions and our words, so that our wives may know that they are loved and they are cherished by us. And Father, will you put your blessing upon our marriages so that we can have joyful homes? There will be struggles, there will be differences over finances, there will be differences over parenting. There'll be struggles when it comes to the messes our kids bring home or the messes that our jobs bring us because maybe we got fired. God, those things impact our houses, but I pray your protection against those things. But Father, I pray that you'll give us marriages that can stand up underneath those difficulties. So Father, will you bring your blessing upon our homes? My last prayer request, God, is will you bless us as a church? Will you allow this place to become a safe harbor for marriages? That saddens my heart, God, that that church people can put on such faces because they're afraid of being disrespected, being shunned by the church. They won't be honest about the struggles that's happening in the house. The culture, they share that stuff around the water cooler in a heartbeat. But in church, we tend to hide the truth. God, will you help us as LifeSpring to be a safe harbor for marriages? Will you give us the ability and the insight and the wisdom to strengthen marriages, to step into difficult situations with your word and the right words, to help a couple go from heading to divorce to 50 years of marriage and going strong? God, will you help us do that as a church? God, I thank you for the institution of marriage because I fully believe it helps us understand more the relationship you desire to have with us as well, the intimacy that you desire to have. So, Father, I pray that our culture of divorce will continue to shift, and I pray for these millennials that as they're wrapping their minds around this, they may figure it out better than my generation did growing up in the 70s and 80s. Father, I pray that they'll have lifelong marriages, and even though they didn't have the example, they will become the example for two or three or four generations to come. So, Father, I pray for the divorce stats in our country. And now, Father, as we leave this place, go with us, because we're going to jump in our cars, and this topic may become a conversation on the way home. It may end up popping up this afternoon. And I just pray, Holy Spirit, that you'll step in right there and that you will guide and you will lead and you will teach and we'll learn to rely on you. So thank you for the institution of marriage. And God, may your blessings help us keep it strong always. In your name we pray. Amen.